I love the phrase pressure is a privilege. And I go into life with that, is that pressure creates diamonds and pressure is a good thing. I never want to be the best at what I do in a room. And if I am, I'm in the wrong room. So it feels nerve-wracking. It feels exhilarating. And I'm excited to learn and grow.
Hello. This is Jeff Sankoff, the Tri-Doc, an emergency physician, triathlon coach, and multiple Ironman finisher. And this is the Tri-Doc Podcast, the April 19th, 2024 edition. And it's coming, as always, from beautiful, sunny Denver, Colorado. It's been a couple of interesting weeks on the professional triathlon circuit with the opening of the North American Ironman race season here in Oceanside a couple of weeks ago, and the T100 race in Singapore last weekend. The races were dramatically different, but no less exciting. In Oceanside, we saw Taylor Nibb absolutely dominate from wire to wire, with the rest of the field really only competing for the minor placings pretty much as soon as they left T1. On the men's side, it was a very different story, where we saw the always entertaining Lionel Sanders produce his best swim ever, showing off the fruits of all of his labors over the past several months, and come out of the water very much in the mix before riding his way into second by the time they rolled into T2. He would start the run in the company of Sam Long and Jackson Laundrie, but would soon exert his power over those two and take the win in convincing fashion. For his innumerable fans, including myself, it was a great spectacle, and we can hope that it is a sign of more to come as the spring and summer come on. A week later, over in Asia, the conditions were far more inhospitable, with high heat and humidity, and the course was, well, it was a PTO city course, so not exactly the challenge that Oceanside produced. Still, the racing was fierce, though the conditions forced many of the favorites to have to drop out, including Chelsea Sodaro and India Lee on the women's side, and Sam Laidlow and, alas, somewhat predictably, Alistair Brownlee on the men's, just the latest of his DNFs in a racing season. By the time all was said and done, Dutchman and fourth-place finisher in Miami, Yuri Kulin, had taken the win, with Sam Long again finishing second once more. This after exiting the swim dead last. Perhaps he needs to follow Lionel's swim plan. On the women's side, who else but Ashley Gentle took the tape, with Lucy Charles-Barkley in second and Els Visser in third. Returning to Oceanside for just a second, I wanted to give some follow-up to my comments on the form goggles that I mentioned in my monologue in the last episode. Longtime listener and friend of mine, Brian Dunn, shared his experience using the Swim Straight feature in that event, and he is convinced that it was easy to use and a definite benefit to his race. He sent me the tracing of his swim for 2024 overlaid with the tracing from 23, and this year, no question, definitely appeared straighter, though I concede the accuracy of those GPS files is suspect at best. Still, based of this N of 1, from an individual who is a competitor of mine in my age group, I take this review seriously, and it was enough to get me to buy a pair. If they are as good as he says, I can't, after all, be letting my competitors get any time on me if I can help it. I'm going to be coaching at a training camp in a few weeks, and we'll be doing some open water swimming there, so I'll have a chance to try this feature out myself and promise to report back then. Until then, suffice it to say, this is still a bit of a pricey piece of equipment for swimming. Not as pricey as some of the stuff we pay for on the bike, for example, not even as pricey as a pair of shoes, but pricey when you consider that you have to pay an ongoing fee for the subscription in order to make use of this feature. Still, if you can afford it, might be something you want to consider, given that other people are going to be using it and potentially getting a little bit of a benefit. I'll let you know how it goes when I have a chance to use them. On the show today, Juliet Hochman is back after her vacation and joins me again on the medical mailbag, where we will answer another listener question. This time around, we will be looking at whether or not there is any evidence to support the claims being made about turmeric, that brightly orange-colored spice that is used so liberally in Indian cooking. Aside from contributing to the delicious flavors of some fantastic foods, can it also help in decreasing inflammation and curing just about all that ails you? Well, we're going to take a look and try to provide some answers, and that's coming right up. Later, I'm eager to share a conversation that I had with newly minted professional triathlete Jessica Cullen. Jess and her husband Mark are the co-hosts of the Endurance Icons podcast, a show that I had the great privilege to be a guest on recently, and she just raced for the first time as a pro in Oceanside 2 weeks ago. Let me tell you, to hear her tell it, you would think she had won the darn thing. She enjoyed herself that much. You can hear why she had so much fun and how she has loved making the transition from age grouper to pro, all while keeping her day job as a managing partner in a financial services corporation, and that conversation is coming up in just a little while. Before all of that, I want to take a moment to thank, once again, all of my Patreon supporters of this podcast who have decided that for about the price of a cup of coffee per month, they could sign up to support this program, and in doing so, get access to bonus interviews and other segments that come out about every month or so. Those bonus episodes are available on a private feed for all of my subscribers. Plus, for North American subscribers who sign up at the $10 per month level of support, they receive a special thank you gift in the form of a BOCO TriDoc podcast running hat. So visit my Patreon site today at patreon.com/TriDocPodcast and see what's involved in becoming a supporter so that you could potentially get access to those bonus episodes and maybe this cool gift as well. And as always, I thank you in advance just for considering.
After being succeeded by the incredibly capable and very fun Stephanie Van Bever, she's back. Juliet Hockman, welcome back to the Medical Mailbag.
Thank you. I missed you last time, Jeff.
And I missed you as well. It's great to have you back. We have another listener question, which always gets me excited to have these conversations when we're not having to find questions on our own. What are we going to be talking about now? Oh, first of all, really, I really want to know, how was vacation?
Oh, it was good. It was a little bit sort of disrupted by life, but we did have a good 3 or 4 days on the coast of Oregon, riding some cool gravel trails and being on the beach with our crazy dog. So thank you for asking. It was a lot of fun.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. Okay, let's get to the question that we've had submitted by a listener. Why don't we get right to it?
Yeah, I love this question because it is about a substance, for lack of a better word, that we use often in cooking and is readily available. It's not some sort of fancy thing. So I love this. The question is from one of our listeners, and he says, or he asks, I've heard that turmeric supplementation assists with general inflammation reduction through, quote, highly scientific sources, aka hearsay. So I'm curious if anyone else has gone down this road and has done any research on it. I'm considering buying a bottle of turmeric capsules and using it as part of my daily do everything possible to recover from surgery regimen. Question to the TriDoc is, does turmeric do anything to help reduce inflammation or to help us in any other way as we recover from injury and training?
Yeah, that's a good question. And this is coming from one of the newer Patreon supporters of the program, Justin Raphael. He is rehabbing from an ACL surgery that he had not too long ago. So shout out to Justin as he sits back and gets through the early steps of that rehab. I know that he is champing at the bit to get back in the pool and on his bike. And I know that he's doing pretty well so far. It's a really good question. And one, I don't know about you, but my sort of social media feeds, it shows up in Facebook all the time. I'm constantly seeing these little adverts for turmeric. And I had kind of blown it off in the past. I just figured it was one of these kind of naturopathic sort of things that gets a lot of press, but probably didn't have a lot of science behind it. But when Justin asked, I thought, well, let's take a look. Maybe there's something behind it. I mean, if it's getting as much press as it is, and it's been in things like the New York Times. So I figured maybe there's something here. So I did a quick PubMed search, and sure enough, there's a ton. There's actually a lot.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's an ingredient in a lot of smoothies. Like I'll buy it fresh in the supermarket and peel it and throw it in my smoothies with ginger and other things and feel really good about myself. So I'm really curious to hear what you found out.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny because I always buy the ground powder, turmeric powder, because I use it when I cook and especially when you're making Indian food, right? Because it gives that bright kind of orange color. Good luck if you get it on a like any kind of like plastic cutting board. It's there forever.
Right.
But it's got that wonderful color and it adds a lot of flavor to a lot of typical Indian curries and things like that. And so it's in a lot of foods. I had never actually looked for the root. I'm going to look for it now because I want to find it.
Yeah.
But the compound that's in turmeric that is of interest here is a molecule called curcumin. which is interesting because I don't know that it's actually found in cumin itself, but there you are. Anyways, it's called curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N. It's a natural polyphenol. And there is that chemical compound that we have talked about before in tart cherry juice. Oh, when did polyphenols come up again? We talked about polyphenols just recently when we were talking about another supplement, when we talked about plasmade.
Yeah,
when
right.
we talked about the resin from the trees, the pine bark. So polyphenols are these naturally occurring compounds that we see in nature, and they have all of these like double bonds and in their structure. And these double bonds are awesome at just sucking up free radicals and sucking up free electrons that are commonly found in inflammatory processes. And so they're really good natural anti-inflammatory compounds. And so from time immemorial, people have learned that using turmeric root can provide a lot of benefit to people who have inflammatory conditions. And so eventually, scientists decided, well, we should look at this and see if it actually holds up under scientific scrutiny. And you know what? It does. The benefits of curcumin supplementation are really provable in randomized control studies, sort of the gold standard trials that we look at to determine whether or not something really works. And this has been looked at in human disease, specifically inflammatory type diseases. One of the ones that has the best evidence to support it is rheumatoid arthritis. Mm. There is a genetic component to it. We don't really understand exactly how it comes about. It's an autoimmune disease where basically your immune system gets turned on to attack the cartilage in specific joints. It often starts in the hands. It progresses to the neck and the wrists, and it can be quite devastating and very painful. We have medications that can work to control it, but most of those work by kind of turning down the immune system, and that can lead to a lot of problems in and of itself. Well, turmeric has been evaluated as a means of controlling the symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis, and turns out works pretty well. Several studies have shown anti-arthritic effects of curcumin in humans with rheumatoid and even with osteoarthritis. Osteoarthritis is another form of arthritis, not an autoimmune thing, but rather one just that occurs generally from wear and tear where you have breakdown of the cartilage over time. There is felt to be a bit of an inflammatory component, but not nearly as much as there is with rheumatoid arthritis. Nonetheless, in both of these, curcumin has been found to be quite effective. Now, there is an interesting problem with curcumin, and that is that it's not readily bioavailable. If you'll recall, we've talked about bioavailability before. That has to do with if you eat 100 grams of any particular substance, how much of that 100 grams will get absorbed by the gastrointestinal tract, make it past the liver, not be completely broken down, get into the bloodstream, and then be available to actually do what it can do. And it turns out that curcumin has an incredibly low bioavailability because it tends to get broken down in several different processes. But if you consume it with other kinds of compounds, specifically compounds found in black pepper, another reason I think a lot of curries are so spicy.
Okay.
There's a compound in black pepper called, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but it's piperine, I think. Okay. P-I-P-E-R-I-N-E, piperine. Anyways, if you take curcumin with piperine, you can increase the bioavailability dramatically. And so a lot of these supplements, a lot of turmeric studies basically combine the curcumin with the piperine in order to make sure that you're getting enough of this stuff absorbed.
Huh.
So pretty good studies to show that curcumin can help with the inflammatory process and reduce the symptoms seen in these established diseases. Other studies have looked at whether or not curcumin can actually help with preventing inflammation and preventing these diseases from coming up in the first place. And there's kind of a lot of quasi-research around that. There's no real great studies that say definitively that curcumin definitely prevents disease down the road or is altogether better for health. However, there's no question. A lot of physiologic studies have shown very clearly that taking in curcumin in various different quantities, and this is one of the problems with these studies. The studies are all over the place with how much you should take. Some of them say 400 milligrams a day. Some of them say up to 1500 milligrams a day. So you're getting these wildly different doses. But even at the smaller doses, we do see that inflammatory markers, so these chemical markers that you can measure in the blood that show whether or not inflammation is happening, they're dramatically decreased by as much as half. Things like tumor necrosis factor or creatine kinase or interleukins, all of these chemicals that are secreted by the inflammatory cells, they drop quite dramatically when people are taking curcumin compared to if they're taking a placebo. So there's biochemical proof that this stuff decreases the inflammatory process and some proof that it decreases symptoms. So we have, you'll remember we've talked in the past, okay, we have a study that shows we decrease inflammatory markers. That's great. That's a biochemical effect. But what we really want to know is there a clinical effect? That's what we're interested in. Well, we've got studies on both here. We see studies that show the biochemical impact, but we also see studies that show the clinical impact. And that's great. To me, that suggests that this stuff really does have positive effects. But for you and me,
right,
for the question I think we're trying to get to is, well, what about for athletes,
right?
That's, now, Justin, I think Justin's question is related specifically to inflammation around injury, and he had a surgery. So that's kind of a different level. You do need some inflammation in order to recover from surgeries. It's kind of hard for me. There's no studies we came across that looked at, does taking curcumin actually improve rehabilitation from injury or rehabilitation from surgery? So I can't answer specifically as to whether or not taking this is going to benefit a surgical rehab. And you always have to be a little bit careful about turning down inflammation completely when you're recovering from an injury, because as we've talked about before, inflammation is part of the healing process.
Right.
But just based on what I read in the papers I saw, it would appear to me that there wouldn't be any harm for someone like Justin to take this stuff. Would it help him? I don't know.
Okay,
I
mean, but what about the middle ground, which is between the surgical inflammatory response and the rheumatoid arthritis? I mean, for the athlete who is looking for, I mean, if we all make the assumption that there is general inflammation going on in our bodies at all times, which is probably even more so if you train regularly, right? Can taking curcumin help with you and me and a lot of our listeners in terms of reducing the general inflammatory process, even if we don't have arthritis per se?
Yeah, and I think that's really the nuts and bolts of what I want to get to next. Right. And we found several papers that looked at this question specifically. So let's start with a study that looked at turmeric being used in elite male footballers. And this is a British study that looked at 24 high-level football players. And the negative in this study is that these players were self-selected. So they weren't randomized into the experimental group and the control group. Rather, they volunteered. So 16 of them said, yeah, I'll take the stuff. And 8 of them said, nah, I'd prefer to be in the control group. So a little bit less rigorous in terms of its architecture of the study. Nonetheless, they looked at these people and they had them actually do an exercise as well as measuring their inflammatory markers. So there was not only a biochemical measurement here, but there was also a clinical measurement in terms of what they were doing. They were doing these jumping exercises. They were also measuring how sore they were after working out, things like that. And they had them take 1400 milligrams of curcumin. It doesn't talk about whether or not there was piperine added to this, but presumably there was something to improve the bioavailability of this stuff. It wasn't taken in a supplement form, but it was actually taken as part of a drink. An interesting drink. Must have been, I don't know how tasty it was.
Comments on
it. Anyways, yeah. Mm-hmm. So what they found was basically significant decreases in the biochemical markers, some decreases in subjective soreness, but no real decreases in the actual exercise performance. A hint here that maybe taking curcumin might provide some decreasing in subjective levels of soreness after performance. Interesting. Another study here is curcumin supplementation on exercise-induced muscle damage. This is a narrative review, basically looking at several different studies, once again, comparing the biochemical markers with subjective reviews of whether or not people reported soreness. And here, the results were pretty interesting. They found, once again, yes, absolutely, biochemically, it appears that there is a decrease in these inflammatory markers. But in terms of reporting soreness, now, again, they weren't able to, these studies didn't look at true performance. It just looked at subjective reports of soreness. In terms of subjective reports of soreness, it depended on how high level an athlete you were. If you were an athlete who came into these studies with a pretty high level of training, you didn't really benefit from the curcumin, even though your biochemical markers seemed to show some improvement. If you were pretty untrained, if you were pretty new to exercise, the curcumin seemed to help. There was, and they don't get into exactly how much it helped, but they definitely seemed to, statistically at least, report less soreness if they were taking this curcumin supplementation. And again, the doses were all over the place, anywhere from 400 to 1,000 milligrams of curcumin once or twice a day. So it's hard to really say how much you should take, if you should take it at all. But for people who are training regularly, their curcumin didn't seem to really benefit in any meaningful way, although for untrained individuals, it seemed to provide some benefit. And again, no harm in anybody. And then the last of these studies that I think was worthwhile talking about is a dietary phytochemical for boosting exercise performance and recovery. This is a very recent study just from a couple of years ago from Food Science Nutrition. Again, looking at a series of studies, 9 studies here, and I'll just read you some of their conclusions. 5 of 9 studies in this review saw positive effects of curcumin on muscle pain after exercise, while the remaining 4 found no significant effects. 8 of 9 studies found significant decreases in muscle damage as determined by enzyme production, so things that we measured in the blood, while 1 paper found no significant difference. The findings in this study suggested that curcumin supplementation might be effective in reducing muscle damage after exercise, but it was difficult to find consensus whether or not curcumin truly reduces muscle soreness, and the authors ended up not really knowing what to do with the, you know, and there was a final study where where it basically sort of put together the recommendations from different bodies who oversee different sports and things like that. And basically they really couldn't come to recommend the stuff. They did not say that you shouldn't take,
right?
But none of these sort of governing bodies could come up with enough evidence to say, yeah, this is good, you should take it. But again, nobody is saying you shouldn't. Nobody is saying it's bad. Nobody is saying it has any detrimental effects. And it clearly seems to have some biochemical effects that decrease inflammation. And so I'm kind of left at the end, sort of shrugging my shoulders and saying, hey, if you want to take this, I mean,
yeah,
I wouldn't say not to.
And there wasn't, you did say that there wasn't a whole lot of sort of agreed upon conclusions about the quantity that one should take. So that leads me to the question, was there any discussion of, you know, sort of natural, like you've got to get the root and put it in things that, you know, from the supermarket shelf, or versus the spice that you find in the spice rack versus the concentrated tablet that you can get in the sort of health and wellness section?
So I don't know how much curcumin is in an individual like piece of turmeric root.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So my sense is that if you want to get the actual bioavailable stuff,
right,
you're going to have to turn to these supplements.
Interesting.
Although if you read a lot of like sort of the lay press stuff, they talk about just turmeric straight up.
Right.
Some of these capsules are even just straight turmeric. And that makes me wonder, well, is turmeric that rich in curcumin, or are these people just selling you overpriced spice?
Right.
I don't know. Now, turmeric is not cheap, right? I mean,
right.
Spices in general are not that cheap, but
yeah,
turmeric is one of the more expensive ones. I took a look to see what it would cost for some of these supplements. Again, it's kind of hard to know how much you should be taking, so I don't know. But here, for example, I found one online. This is curcumin 500 with bioperine. Again, in order to make it bioavailable, you have to combine it with something. So this one combines it with their, I don't know why they call it bioperine. It's basically just black pepper. And for 60 tablets, which according to them, you should be taking 2 capsules a day. So this is basically a 1 month supply, $49. Personally, given how much we pay for other kinds of things, this doesn't strike me as being all that expensive, but then you just have to determine, is this worth it to me?
Right.
I personally, I'm not going to run out and buy this stuff, but $49 doesn't buy that much Indian food either.
Right. Well, the other thing to think about is if you enjoy the sort of process of putting together a cool smoothie or something like that, I mean, the process of peeling the natural turmeric root, if you're going to put it in there with other natural ingredients besides just straight protein powder and almond milk, like if you're into more of a complex smoothie than that. You could just go out and buy some turmeric root and experiment with it and see if you like the taste, if you like the process, et cetera. Because if we don't really know, and we know it's not going to hurt us, then, you know, you could give that a try too.
Well, the one hang up is the pepper.
Yes, I know. I was thinking that. What do you do? Grind pepper in there as well to increase the efficacy of it? That would make for a very spicy smoothie.
I know. That's the one hang up for me. It's funny. When I think about all of the things that I've reviewed personally and then we've reviewed together in 100 and almost 50 episodes now, the things that have worked are all these natural products.
Right.
And this is just the latest one that has pretty good evidence to suggest it does confer some benefits. The only issue is, I don't think that the evidence is strong enough to say that, yes, triathletes should be. I'm not going to add that,
right?
Like, but if somebody wanted to, more power to them. Sure. I do not think there's any reason not to. I think this is definitely for just health and wellness. You could do a lot worse. So this would be something that if somebody wanted to, then by all means, it would be something that would be worthwhile. So yeah, just kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And I think it's always cool. I love when listeners reach out and submit questions. It gives us something more interesting to kind of look into. And if you have a question, I hope that you'll consider sending it in. You can reach me by email at tri_doc@icloud.com. You can submit your question on the private Facebook group for the TriDoc podcast. Just search for TriDoc podcast on that platform. Answer the 3 very easy questions. I will grant you admittance to the group. You can join the conversation there. I'm looking for commentary, feedback, how to improve this show, and of course, your questions that we can answer. Until the next medical mailbag, Julia, thank you so much for being here. It was great to see you back, and this was a good conversation. I look forward to the next one.
Thanks, Jeff. I think the next time we record this, will we be at camp?
Well, we'll record before we go, but yes, I will see you in person the next time the episode comes out.
For camp, okay.
Yeah, exactly. All right, take care, Julia.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
My guest today is one half of the pair who co-hosts the Endurance Icon podcast, a podcast that I had the great pleasure of being a guest on very recently. If you haven't heard that episode, why not? I'm going to post the link in the show notes, of course, but my guest today is one half of the hosting pair of that. I'm going to have the other half at a later date because they're both really interesting in their own right. But today, it's my great pleasure to have Jessica Cullen on the show. Jessica is a rookie professional triathlete. She debuted as a professional just recently at Oceanside 70.3, and so I'm really excited to hear all about that experience. Prior to that, she won Ironman Canada as an age grouper in 2022. That is to say, she took the overall age group win for women. She did the same thing at Mont-Tremblant 70.3 in 2023. Off of the race course, she is no less busy as the managing partner at Regenerative Capital Group. She is married to her partner, podcast host and coach, Mark Cullen. And off of the race course, she won a top 40 under 40 award as a professional in Canada. She lives in Waterloo, Ontario, where she's coming to me today. Jessica, thank you so much for joining me.
Wow. I'm so happy to be here. And for the record, you will have the better half when you have Mark. So, can't wait for that one.
Well, Jess, I am really excited to talk to you so soon after your first professional race. It's something that I know you were looking forward to. It's been a long time coming. Tell me first and foremost how you found your way to triathlon in the first place. You're obviously a very successful woman in business. What got you to triathlon?
That is always a complicated question because I find that people often don't begin in triathlon, and I wasn't any different. As a child, I wasn't athletic anyway, did zero sports, and I truthfully didn't start anything sports related until I was in my 20s. And I started running, and I was one of those really annoying people who loved running instantly, like just loved it. I was not to say that I was extraordinarily good at it in any way, but I just loved the challenge of it. I loved this whole idea of pushing your limits. So what started as doing a bit of cross country in my 4th year varsity team quickly grew when I graduated from university into going into multi-day adventure racing. And I tried bike racing and crit racing. And I was just sampling everything, did some ultra marathons, And I just fell in love with this whole idea and pursuit of pushing your limits and seeing what you can achieve and seeing what's possible. And I had so many coaches and advisors and just friends saying, if you would only focus, you would be so good. You just put your energy in too many places, which like, I think I hear from like any executive coach I've ever worked with. So I think that's just like a toxic trait of mine. I just love too many things. But then when I discovered triathlon, I was like, you mean I could focus on something and there's still three sports that I can do. So I said, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. So my very first triathlon was in 2016. I did the Muskoka course. And at the time, I had gotten a free entry from Genuine Health, which was a company I was working with at the time. They were supporting me. And I always said, I'm going to try this triathlon thing and I'm going to go back to running. And years later, almost a decade later, and I'm still in the sport and loving it. So it sort of found me, and I just love how diverse and how much variety. There's always something to work on.
Now, the annoying people are the people who take to swimming right away. most of us adult onset swimmers are annoyed by those types. Where did you come? Like, how did the swimming part come for you?
Well, I needed to learn how to swim for my first Ironman. So quickly got into the pool. I don't think I swam more than 2,000 meters. And my very first swim, I had a full-on panic attack because I was not used to it. So terrible swimming. I think I did more breaststroke in that race than I did anything else. So I am not a swimmer, although I am working desperately to become one.
Okay, good. So then we're on the same wavelength here.
Yeah.
I'm interested, when you did that first race in Muskoka, what was it about the triathlon that hooked you? Because I had the same kind of experience. I did my first race, although I hated every single second of it. But as soon as I crossed the finish line, I knew that my life was changed and I was in it for the long run. What was it for you that kind of made you realize, nope, this is it for me?
Well, for me, like, sport and life has always been linked from the moment that I started doing sports. So for me, one of the key drivers of who I am as a person is other people and community. So immediately once I start anything new, I try to surround myself with people that I love. And so this was no different. And for me, it was the journey of preparing for this Ironman. I absolutely loved the adventure of getting together with friends, learning how to swim, laughing at how bad we were, and even just the whole ecosystem around the race. Like, we actually stayed at a camp race weekend and this post-race celebration. So I think outside of the sport, the number one draw at the very beginning, and it continues to be, is all about the people and community around the sport. I just think that they're tremendous and I love it. And then, of course, it's the challenge. It's this whole idea of there's three different sports. They're diverse. They're constantly changing. And if the sport doesn't change, then you change. And so you're always tweaking variables. And there's something really profound and exciting about you're never going to arrive. You're never going to fully figure it out. I mean, if Taylor Nibb doesn't feel like she's figured out the 70.3 distance, like, it just shows all of us have a lifetime of pursuit of this. And there's something really special about that. So I think that's why I'm hooked, is just it's this endless pursuit of trying to get better.
And at what point did you realize, hey, you know what? I'm actually pretty good at this.
I mean, I don't even think I'm still there. No, I think the moment that I felt that was maybe Ironman Canada in 2022 when I won it. It was up until then, I had smatterings of success in there. I mean, my very first Ironman in Lake Placid was in 2017. And one thing that I will say is I've never not run a Boston qualifying time off the bike. I love to run off the bike. It's something that I'm really comfortable doing. I'm a runner first. But the thing is, and I'm very clear on this, you can't say you had a good triathlon if you just did one element of it really well. It's tying it all together. And Ironman Canada was maybe the first race that I felt like I'd all three together in a really great way. It was just one of those almost perfect days. And so I ended, I'm like, wow, like, did the stars just align perfectly, or is it me? So I think after that race, I'm like, maybe I can do more with this sport. So I think 2022 was the moment.
And you qualified for Pro Kart at that point, but you didn't take it at that? Is that correct?
That's correct. I was actually quite resistant to the idea. Mark, my husband, partner, and coach, he was the first one that said, we were in line to board our flight on the way home. And he said, I want to just plant a seed. Have you ever thought about taking your pro card? And I said, never, ever, ever. And he's like, well, I'm planting the seed and I think you should take it. And I said, if I do this, I want a full year of development and I want you to train me like I'm a professional athlete. And I want to see how that feels before I commit. Because the one thing is, I have the utmost respect to the level of caliber that is in the professional field. And if I go into the field, I want to make sure that I can compete and just acknowledge like that this is a bigger leak. So I did take a development year just to test it out and wrap my head around that idea.
So then you come back in 23, you again win the overall age group women at Tremblant 70.3, qualify for your pro card. And I assume that's where you take the card.
Well, yes. So it was, I submitted for it at the end of last year. So yes, did apply for it and was accepted. And here I am.
What does that feel like? I mean, you go from, you're like us, you're an age grouper, you're having success. I have had the good fortune to win my age group a few times. I have never been anywhere close to the top of the overall. I'm a little past the age where that would actually happen. But what does that feel like to now all of a sudden make that transition? Now you're going to be a pro. You're getting ready for your first season as a pro. How does that feel?
It's so hard to fully explain how it feels. I can tell you, I dream about my races. Like if you felt like you're nervous about races before, the pressure that you have with being a pro is like double that. And it's not that the racing is significantly different. It's just that you are making a statement and you're putting yourself out there. You're stepping into the arena and you do open yourself up for a lot more ability, a lot more commentary, and I would say pressure. But I love the phrase pressure is a privilege. And I go into life with that is that pressure creates diamonds and pressure is a good thing. I never want to be the best at what I do in a room. And if I am, I'm in the wrong room. So it feels nerve-wracking. It feels exhilarating. And I'm excited to learn and grow. It continues to reinforce. It's just that next step in what I've committed to in triathlon, which is always seeing like, how can I push my limits and how can I keep upping the ante in what I can do?
Now, what do you sort of envision this to be about? Because you're obviously a successful professional and professional businesswoman. I've had the great fortune of speaking to some other pro triathlete women who were also successes in their careers. Skye Munch, Laura Siddle, Heather Fuhrer, they all were very successful in their business careers. And then they all of a sudden kind of had this realization, well, you know what, I actually have a chance to make a go of this. But in order to make a go at being a professional triathlete, I'm going to have to leave my job and really focus on this full time. So my question is two-part. Number one, how are you sort of envisioning your career as a professional triathlete right now? And number two, what would it take for you to kind of get to the point that they did to then say, you know what, I'm going to make this my full-time thing?
That's a really great question. For me, I think my entire life, everything's been about like equal and opposing passions. So I feel like I'm better at what I do in work because I do triathlon, and I'm better at life because I do triathlon. So it's triathlon can be successful because I'm not worried about like, how am I going to pay my bills? I have a job, I can support myself. So I really don't have the answer for that. Just being a total rookie, this is a year of being like, well, what's on the horizon here? But what I can tell you is the career path I'm on, I love it. And I have no intention of doing pro full time. It's just, it's testing my limits brings me so much joy. So I don't see myself giving that up.
Okay. So you're not in it for the money. So what are your goals as a professional? You say to test your limits, but I mean, what if you were to say right now, these are sort of my top three goals that I've set for myself as a professional. What would they be?
It's funny because it's so much easier to set goals once you've been in a space for a long time. So before in an amateur season or age group, I'd be able to be like, these are my top three. I want to, like, I know approximately where I'm going to place in all these races. I'm still figuring out where I'm going to place overall in the pro field. I would say I want to get better at my swim. I want to make sure that I'm in at least the second chase pack in the swim. With the new Ironman Pro series, they've done a tremendous job of bringing a lot of exposure and support to their athletes. So if you look at my race calendar, I am targeting all of the key Ironman Pro series races in North America. So I call it my champagne goal, and I'll explain a little bit what that means. My champagne goal is to get the top 50 list of Ironman in my rookie season. And I think that it's an achievable goal, but I'm going to have to hustle for it, which I love. So, and a champagne goal is just at the beginning of the year, you get a bottle of champagne, you write your goal on it and you keep it where you can see it every day. And then you break open that bottle of champagne when you get it. So I'm hoping that I get to do that by the end of the year.
I love that. I have like three goals that I write on a piece of paper and I put it in my closet and it's on the wall so that every day when I'm getting dressed, my goals are right there. So let's take a look at what just happened. I mean, we're talking today, you and I were talking just a week removed from Oceanside, which was your debut.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like? What was it like showing up? And I mean, here are some of the absolute studs on the men's side, the stellar top women performers showing up as well. What was it like being in that field?
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I was so excited to be a part of that race. And like you said, I think the moment that I was most nervous, even more than race morning, was the race briefing, where you're walking in and you're seeing like Taylor Nibb is walking in, Lionel Sanders is here, Paula Findlay's walking, and like they're just sitting like down the row from you. It was the wildest experience. And I think that that was the moment for me where it started feeling really real. And then having your own space for your bike, it's in the pro area, watching how people are, being a fan of the sport, having followed these people, just actually getting up close and seeing how they are like pre-race and realizing like, oh, like I'm in this field. And also how incredibly welcoming and generous they are. They were so encouraging. I told a story, Lisa from RTS, right before the gun went off, before we went into the water, she came to me and she said, like, she was so happy that I'd thrown my hat in the ring and she wished me a good race. And she gave me some advice. She's like, the first race as a rookie is really, really hard. And she's like, my first race, there were five age group women that finished in front of me. And I had like an existential crisis, like wondered why I went pro. She's like, don't let that happen to you today. Just like, enjoy. You only get one first pro race. So I'm like, wow, like what great advice. So I really took that to heart and had the best day I could. I learned a lot, definitely made some silly rookie mistakes that I'm hoping to just shake out of my system as I go on to Ironman Texas in a couple weeks. But I can't tell you what an incredible and overwhelming experience it was.
I was going to ask, and you kind of answered it, about what it was like. I mean, here you're one of several high profile Canadians. You had Tamara there, you had Paula, you had Matt, you had Lionel, you had Jackson. Were they approachable? I mean, I'm always amazed as an age grouper how approachable some of these people are. Not everyone, but many of them are very approachable and just so genuine and so nice. And I often wonder, if you're a pro, is there going to be a different sort of atmosphere because, hey, we're competitors now? But you make it sound like, no, not necessarily. It sounds like everybody was very welcoming.
Oh, they were so welcoming. I don't think that they're scared of me yet, but we'll hopefully change that. But
yeah.
they're just a phenomenal, mm-hmm. phenomenal group of people. Like they are truly are just professionals in the true sense of the word. You and I both know Matt, and I would say just to show what a kind, humble guy he is. Like we connected quite a bit over that weekend. We were standing in registration and there was an athlete that came up to us and said, like, do you work here? Like, can you help me with something? And then Matt just sort of laughed and graciously said, like, no, I don't work here. But, and then he pointed to, I felt like saying, I was like, no, this man's an Olympian, but no, but he just so kind, so humble. There was one moment on race morning that I forgot elastics for my flying mounts. And I just like asked a couple of the pros and they were, here you go. And we all wished each other a great race. Like it was a lot of camaraderie. And I think you see that though in the interviews, like, don't get me wrong. Those women will rip your head off on the race course and as they should, but off the race course, like, I don't think you're going to see a more supportive group of men or women, and they're just class acts.
I want to get through some of the mistakes you made. So let's just take the race bit by bit. And mostly because I'm sure some of the mistakes you made are mistakes we make as age groupers, but they're magnified because you're a pro and they're magnified because you're moving quicker and because the stakes are higher. So tell me how the swim went for you and what mistakes you might have made.
Okay. Well, the swim, I didn't make as many mistakes in the swim. The swim was just really, really cold. And one of the things that I will fully admit is I'm a bit of a wimp when it comes to the cold. Is even though I'm Canadian, I just don't love it. So I find that I have a hard time regulating my breathing and staying calm. So at a really fast start, I definitely didn't perform in the swim the way that I would have hoped. But this is just all learnings. Oceanside is it's an ocean swim. So you're going to have waves. You're going to have lots to attest with. So it was just a really great way to just for me to learn, like, how does the pack move? What's the speed? Do they sprint and settle in? Or what does that look like? And the one thing that was really difficult in the swim is when you turn at, I would say around 800 meters into the swim, you're hit by this like blaring sunlight and you can see nothing. So there actually was, this didn't happen to me, but there was a couple pros that went off course because it's just, I can't express how impossible it is to see. So I actually started doubting myself, even though I did know the swim course. So this is one mistake. I actually did just pop my head up and say to the guy very quickly on the kayak, just saying, like, still going this way. And he nodded. So I went as fast as I could. But so that was a little bit of a wrinkle in the swim. But outside of being cold and just not having my hands unthaw, it went, I think, as well as it could have. But no mistakes yet. The race was pretty young.
Were you in that second pack where you hoped to be, or were you further back?
Oh, I was further back. Yes. It was just...
Okay.
I found because of the cold, I was finding a hard time regulating my breathing. So I decided instead of... Sometimes if you push too hard when it's cold, you can almost... Or at least I've found that you almost hyperventilate, which can slow you down even further. So realizing, okay, I actually at this moment need to swim my pace, even if it means letting go of the feet that I need. So at that moment, I needed to make that decision. Of course, something to work on. And that's why we're in triathlon.
Right. Yeah. We're never perfect unless you're Taylor.
Yeah.
All right. So you come out of the water. How about T1?
So T1 is a really long run. So it just felt like forever. My feet were like blocks, completely frozen, but the run itself was pretty good. Like I said, run is my favorite of the three sports. So I'm like, for a moment, totally in my element here. I got to my bike. I will, a little bit of background, before race morning, I went over to Mark because he was in transition before I went down to the water. And I said to him, everything's gone really, really smoothly this morning. I'm feeling good, confident. I said, but I can't for the life of me find where my bike computer is. And I'm not going to stress about it. We had said that this race, because we had decided to do Oceanside like just a couple weeks before, sort of a tune-up because my focus is Texas. It was like, I'm not going to be too worried about power. It's just send it and see how the race dynamics are. It's all about learning. So didn't allow that to affect my mindset, but could not find my bike computer. Thought it was back at the hotel. I take my bike, I rush past the mounting line, and I can't tell you what a beautiful flying mount that I did. And I try to put my foot in my shoe, and I was like, what the heck? Like, what's going on? And I start, and I realize that the reason that I couldn't find my bike computer, it was jammed into my toe box of my shoe. So after my flying mount, I needed to do like the stop of shame, where I actually needed to like get down on my hands and knees and like pick out my bike computer. It was so far in, reattach it. And when you're looking in the pro series where they say every second matters, I was just like, I'm such an idiot. So had a good laugh about that one. So that was a big, stupid mistake that I made. And then another one was race morning, and again, preventable. So totally on me. But I was reading my fueling plan that Mark creates, and I was prepping my bottle because I wanted it to be fresh for that day. And so I was like, okay, 250 grams on the bike. And I was like, cool. So I take my nutrition and I put, I think it was like 15 scoops into my front bottle, grab my gels and go. And I was drinking it. I was like, wow, this is really, really salty. Turns out it was supposed to be 250 total. And I put 250 in the bottle alone. I had an additional like 120 that I also took. So I averaged like 130 grams an hour on that bike. So when you asked before we started recording if I was well recovered, it's because I like so much damn nutrition. But what that shows me is I've been working on the upper limit of my nutrition in Ironman training. And I'm like, holy smokes, if I can have zero gut issues with 130 grams, like we're doing okay. So
yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That is incredible. So how did the rest of the bike go? You were well fueled.
Very well fueled. The bike went well. I love a hilly course. It suits my strengths. In this one, and it was super cool, we went through an active military camp. I think where some of my learnings are is you're racing with, because we are riding through a camp and they need to close it at a specific time, they sent the waves off much closer together than they normally do. So we actually needed to contend a lot more with the top age group guys than we would normally need to. And because there's the extra pressure as a pro that of getting penalties, like I will get a 5-minute penalty, like just like that, if I'm seen to be drafting in any way. The only problem is we had all these age group guys that were coming. And what started happening is they'd try to pass me and not be able to fully make the pass. But so then they'd be riding beside me. And then I needed to keep dropping back. So I felt like I was losing time. And I think maybe in retrospect, I maybe would have ridden a bit more aggressively than I did. But I was just so nervous about getting a penalty. So that was a big learning for me. But I think we didn't get to race with Race Ranger for this one. So I'm interested to see for Texas of what the difference that's going to make in the dynamics.
How about the run? The run's your favorite. So how'd that go?
It was wonderful. I left the bike, and it's funny because in case you aren't catching on, like I'm so grateful. It was my first time doing Oceanside. I appreciated the experience. The race didn't go like it wasn't a mountaintop race. It was a learning race. So I wasn't sure whenever something like that happens where the race isn't going perfectly, how the run is going to go. Now, one of the things, even if the race isn't going to plan or it's not feeling like I'm crushing it, I never count myself out for a second. I always am just, even before the race series where every second matters, I just, it's so like unwise to assume your race is over, even if some things go wrong. And that's been an important lesson even coming up through age group racing. So I went out on the run and I said, well, okay, I haven't used data at any moment in this race, so I'm not going to start now. I was tracking it, but I just put my watch face to the time. I just started running. And I got to tell you, my first 2 kilometers were my slowest. I settled into a rhythm and I just had a blast on that run course. I was cutting, like going through the field. I was passing other pros. I was feeling really good and feeling like I was hitting my stride. It's a nice, fast and flat course. And because the crowd support is just absolutely unreal. So that's where I was giving high fives to kids and laughing. And it was so much fun.
And so obviously you're really happy with how it went all in all. It sounds like, I mean, you're just so exuberant about the whole thing. You're obviously quite pleased with how it went, even if you're not necessarily thrilled with the result.
Yeah. And I think that that's such a good differentiation to make is that I told Mark on the way back, I said, am I thrilled with my time? Absolutely not. Am I thrilled with my race? Yes. I can't tell you how much courage it took to race my first professional race and to put myself out there and test out my training. And I think memory of a goldfish, you just say not every race gets to be that perfect result, but that's why we do this. We keep trying to get better. It's back perfecting everything and taking all the things that I learned and Like, what's the fun if you can't keep improving?
So now you're heading off to Texas with all of these lessons learned.
Yeah.
You're obviously feeling very relaxed about it instead of being nervous. Who are you going to be competing against there?
Well, competing against, I know that we have Alice Alberts in the field. So she's like the queen of Ironmans. Excited to see her there. I'll be racing alongside my teammate, Alice and Jacob. So we're traveling down together. And this one will be fun to have a friend in the field. So yeah, it's going to be a really great course and I'm excited.
And what about the rest of the year? What other races do you have on your schedule?
So after Texas, I have Chattanooga half in May. And then June, I have Mont-Tremblant 70.3. And then I have Lake Placid full in July. And then I have a question mark for the rest of the year because I decided to go after my champagne goal looking at the Pro Series. But after that, who knows? I might do the Chattanooga full, but we'll see. We'll see how it all feels.
Wow. That's a pretty heavy schedule. So that's going to be fun to watch you tackle all of that. And I will wish you nothing but success and continued learning and continued improvements along the way. It sounds like it's going to be a fun year of discovery and of racing. So lots of exciting things to come. That's really wonderful. Tell me just quickly about Endurance Icons. I know I'm going to have the opportunity to speak with Mark at a later episode, but just give me a quick rundown about when you guys started that podcast, what it's about, and where people can find it.
Oh, of course. So Mark and I always joke that about every November, December, when the race series ends, I start and I go into a little less training for an off season. I need to let my energy out with a special project. So like 1 year I started like a drop shipping company. And then the following year I said, you know what, we're going to start a podcast. So like in a weekend, I built out the infrastructure for Endurance Icons. And I said, Mark, like I had named it, I had all the branding and we had our first guests lined up, which was Jackson Laundrie. And we just dove in. And so that was, I think it was just over a year ago that we started it. And we have recorded weekly-ish. We've moved into bi-weekly now, just with all the things going on. But we talk to pros, we talk to experts, we have awesome guests like you on, and it's just about an hour. And we try to release it around the weekends to support because most of our listeners are athletes themselves. So yeah, so people can find us on anywhere that you would find this podcast.
Well, I'll have links for Jess, for Endurance Icons and everything else in the show notes. Jess, I can't thank you enough for joining me here today and talking about your start as a professional. It was really, really interesting. I enjoyed it very much. And I really enjoy your enthusiasm and your attitude, and I can't wait to see how you continue to succeed for the rest of 2024. Jess Cullen is a rookie professional triathlete. She is coming off of her first race at Oceanside and will be racing at Texas in just a few short weeks. Good luck there, Jess, and thanks again for joining me here today.
Thank you so much. I had a blast.
And that's it for another episode. The TriDoc podcast is produced and edited by me, Jeff Sankoff, along with my interns.
I'm Agent Johnson. This is Special Agent Johnson.
Oh, how you doing?
No relation.
I'm Jeff Sankoff, the TriDoc. I'm in charge here.
Not anymore.
Those interns are Ian Johnson and Ben Johnson. You can find the show notes for everything discussed on the show today, as well as archives of previous episodes at tridocpodcast.com. Do you have questions about any of the issues discussed on this episode, or do you have a question that you'd like for me to consider answering on a future episode? Send me an email at tri_doc@icloud.com, or join the private TriDoc Podcast Facebook group on Facebook, and you can submit your questions there. If you're interested in coaching services, please visit tridoccoaching.com or lifesportcoaching.com, where you can find a lot of information about me and the services that I provide. You can also follow me on the TriDoc Podcast Facebook page, TriDoc Coaching on Instagram, and the TriDoc Coaching YouTube channel. If you enjoyed this podcast, I hope that you'll consider leaving me a rating and a review, as well as subscribe to the show wherever you download it. And of course, there's always the option of becoming a supporter of the podcast at patreon.com/TriDocPodcast. The music heard at the beginning and the end of the show is Radio by Empty Hours and is used with permission. This song and many others like it can be found at ReverbNation.com, where I hope that you'll visit and give small independent bands a chance. The TriDoc podcast will be back again soon with another medical question for me to answer and another interview with someone in the world of multisport. Until then, remember 1121 and train hard, train healthy.